Hey there. Before we begin with today's podcast as regularly scheduled, I'd like to shill and give a shout out for Northwest Nerdcast. Ron, Barbara, and Kirsten know their way around gaming. Whether it's LARP or tabletop, they're all accomplished in their own regards. So, since I lost the bet, here's your shill, Ron. Northwest Nerdcast is a podcast much like ours. It's by gamers, for gamers. If you're interested in getting more pro tips about being a new player, or whether you want to jump into a LARP activity, or get hints and tips from the pros in the field, these are the people to listen to. I mean, yeah, listen to us as well, but also give them a listen, because they're really cool. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Welcome back, everyone. Now we've got our next best episode here for the end of March, and we're going to delve into gaming etiquette, the do's and don'ts at the gaming table or other platforms, such as when you're online. Next half of the episode, we're going to go on and delve into more of a RP-centric sort of dilly-bob, where we go over tips from the group at hand over... Well, how to find a new gaming group.
Well, and not just that, but also tips for new players. That could be someone invited in. That could be someone seeking to join. That, you know, that section is based on the assumption that the target listeners have zilch for experience.
Yeah, it's under the auspice that they have zilch. So.
Well, here again is me, Darth Blasphemous.
Khazar Kev, Lord Dragon.
And Goblin himself. Roll the intro.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
See? 20 seconds is so much shorter for an intro. People could just sit right through it and be like, bam!
I barely noticed.
All right, so let's get to gaming etiquette, the do's and don'ts. Don't be a dick.
Well, that was easy. Next topic.
I know, right?
Well, I think that might be a little shy of what we need to convey.
Okay, so I'm going to take this from the stance of being both a GM and a player. And don't be a dick, of course, is just the preliminary first step.
Rule zero, don't be a dick.
Yeah, rule zero. I'm going to call you out on this one, Khazar Khan. My first bit of advice for gaming etiquette. When you roll your dice, keep them in your dice rolling area, which is preferably, say, like a 2x2 square, and not bounce them across the table so they land on other players or in other areas where you have to retrieve them. It helps the game move a lot smoother when you ask somebody to roll a die and they actually roll it and then give you the number. Yeah.
So, on that note, I actually got myself a little dice-rolling tray. Some nice little walls, like an octagonal shape, and, like, velvet lining. So, it's quieter and more contained.
You rolled dice and in a box before that, and they would pop out of the box. You'd throw so much, like, shoulder into them.
It was a really nice cigar box, though.
It was.
I think I still have that. It's still amazingly useful for storage.
Yeah. So,
I made my own rolling tray. I put together some wood at work, grabbed some leather off deleted seat parts from things, and just glued it on there, and it came out real nice.
I would have to say, though, the first priority, though, of gaming etiquette is to control your enthusiasm a bit, even when it comes to dice rolling or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Is just, you know, somebody's talking, and they've got the talk stick with the GM or whatever. Don't intercede until they finish up. Keep your dice in the rolling area. Because if you get overly excitable at the table, you're bound to knock something over. I've seen drinks knocked over on people's character sheets, and that never turns out well.
I hate that so much.
Mm-hmm. See? He agrees.
It's like, I disagree either.
I know.
I've gotten better about it since I've played with you guys.
A little bit, but you're still, like, I don't know, man. You're like, are your Ritalin levels, like, dropping or something during game time?
That's neither here nor there.
Okay.
We're back on gaming etiquette.
Oh, we're back on gaming etiquette, not your drug habit. Okay.
Say what you will.
All right. So, yeah, that's what I would have to say. First part is just curb your enthusiasm. It doesn't matter if you're new to the game, old to the game. Just don't be a bundle of over-exuberant energy, especially when it comes to, you know, things are on the table, shit needs to be done. I mean, like, especially during combat scenarios, when the GM is calling out roles, he's got enough shit going on behind the GM screen. And for one player to roll their die with enough fervor to launch it off the table repeatedly slows the game down for everybody else at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also, you know, on the note, you know, as a new player, some things are going to be daunting. Like, as a new player, I wouldn't necessarily play a caster class. As a general, like, you know, it would not be my preferred, because if you're trying to learn the concept of how combat works, and then having all these additional options, it's a little overwhelming.
It can be, which leads actually into another segue. Older gamers, like myself, have been guilty of it. I try to curb that enthusiasm, but I've seen a lot of other people with a lot less control is getting frustrated with newer gamers who don't know everything going on.
And yeah, definitely a big part would be know what you're doing and what, oh my god, know what your bonuses are. Write everything down.
Oh, I know who you're calling out on this one.
Oh, god.
Jesus Christ, every fucking combat. What's wait, the rolls that you one? Add? I don't know, but you just rolled it 15 minutes ago.
Right? When your last turn was.
I know. Actually, that's another good point, too, for gaming etiquette, especially at the gaming table, is know what the fuck is going on. Pay attention. And when it comes down around to your turn, instead of figuring out all of your shit right then and there and having the GM re-explain everything to you
again,
be observant. You know, if it's going to be a little while and the combat rounds are taking some time, part of the problem is people are waiting till it's their turn to decide what they're going to do instead of being ready for it once the DM calls on them.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm not involved, so I'm going to play on my phone.
That will drive your dungeon master fucking nuts.
Yeah, you guys have seen my rant about that.
Several times.
Several times, yes.
Because we're bad people.
You are bad people.
I'm not lump me in with the rest of you.
I'm not going to refute you guys being bad people. I'm not involved, so I'm going to play around on my phone. Well, maybe if you stop playing on your phone, you could get yourself involved.
Right?
Yeah.
The other, you know, and like, there's, you know, etiquette being what it is, it will change by the group that you're joining. That will change. And, you know, talk to them.
That is very true.
When you're going in, when it's your like first session or before your first session, talk to the dungeon master, talk to the storyteller, whoever that role might be, the GM, the DM, storyteller, whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to them. Get a gist of what they're expecting from you as a player. Talk to the other players. Get a gist of what they're expecting of you. And you should, in that same moment, try to set their expectations. Like, look, I'm brand new. You're going to have to be a little patient with me.
Yeah, because different groups have different expectations at the table. Whereas you might have one group and they want to do a meat grinder dungeon crawl, but another group may want to be more roleplay friendly. And if you design a character that doesn't fit in
the group
either stratum,
you're gonna get heat.
Yeah, you're gonna be the odd man out. And you're gonna get heat.
And you know that starts getting into the gaming stuff fun, and that's what turns people off. Is not being feeling of, not having a feeling of being welcome, part of the group, or having fun, ultimately. And, you know, the thing to do is, again, you communicate. If you communicate with your dungeon master or your storyteller, what, you know, hey, I have a few ideas. What would it take for me to get you to work them in? A lot of storytellers are like, fuck yeah, you're doing my work for me.
Yeah.
They'll run with it. You know, like I had one character, I did a one-off. He was a noble half-born elf, right? Warlock. Patron was a sea fae, and you know his whole thing was I want to find out what happened to the ship I was on, because like last thing I remember was this big storm and then I wake up drifting.
Sorry, hold on, I have to do this. Sea fae, where fae?
There fae. One of the other ones too.
There fae.
And drumming up from the past, especially your past, there, Kazrakan. You didn't do this, but it was somebody else. And it falls into the etiquette thing of do not invite yourself to somebody else's table.
Oh, by the gods.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm bringing that up.
Yeah, no, that was a very bad set of months. So, you know, the story behind that is not relevant, but the idea of just coercing your way into a group, and typically that's kind of a veteran thing to do, more so. Like, you know, it's fine. It's fine to ask, hey, I'm kind of interested in what you guys are doing here. Would you mind telling me a bit more? Or would you mind, you know, do you mind if I sit and watch for a little bit to try to see what's going on? And some groups will be okay with this. Other groups will be like, with respect, you're going to learn better from, say, those guys over there or from the shop itself.
Yeah.
And
well, in some cases,
that's okay. That's okay. It is okay to be politely turned down. it is not okay to just kind of shoulder your way in and plunk at the table. Which is what he did. Not me, but a person intruded on a game I was running.
But yeah, that's what he did. He came in, he sat down at your table, and just started trying to play. And then had to up the ante after running away and telling his mommy that you guys wouldn't let him play. But you guys were polite about it. You told me your reasons why you didn't want him in the game. And he still tried to involve himself in your game in the wrong approach. I mean, if I wanted to get into a game group and I saw six people sitting around the table, I know my chances are pretty low. But if I ingratiate myself with a group, spend time sitting amongst them and everything, and even after, say, a couple of weeks, they're still like, no, dude, we have too many people at the table. I should be adult enough to understand that, yes, the GM has six people at the table. There's too many people. If I had myself in, as much as these people like me and I like them, it ain't going to work in the long run.
Right. And, you know, this adding players, especially to a game that's already running, is now a challenge. Mm-hmm. Because they have to find a way to make sense in the world that they're playing in. And that's not always easy. And sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. And sometimes you've got very forgiving DMs who are capable of that. But again, shouldering your way in is not going to last.
Yeah, if you inviting yourself to somebody else's game, and I've seen it happen even in private groups. I've been part of private groups where this has happened. It doesn't almost never turns out well. Like, say you're running a game there, Kaz or Can, and I invite Blasphemous, and you've never met him. We're just going to pretend you've never met him. But I show up at your gaming table. I've been at your gaming table for 2, 3, 4 months. And I show up with a new dude. Most groups are just like, wait, what the hell? Especially if it's a surprise on the GM.
Yeah, no, that... If, like, again, back to communication. Like, this is kind of the big point here to communicate with people. Is you've failed to communicate your intention to bring someone to the table at that point.
Yeah.
Your GM is now automatically not a happy person. They have to, on the spot, deal with someone brand new and completely out of left field. And granting, the GM's job is to deal with that anyway, because that's what players do, is they go, whee!
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Murder hobo.
Murder hobo.
But, you know, following up on that, it's also to make sure that everyone is having fun, and they can't do that without an understanding of the person or the character involved now. And it's, you know, it's unfair to them if that's done to them.
Absolutely. So, as an individual muscling their way in, it's not a good idea. And honestly, I've seen a lot of people bring others to game tables by surprise. Usually, it falls into the category of significant other.
Which is kind of another, it's kind of another gray zone. If you're going to be gaming with your significant other, it is strongly advised. That you find a way to separate your character from their character, or go in already attached to the hip. Like, there are players who will play siblings, or characters who are legitimately in-game married, and that is fine.
I know.
As long as you do it right.
I don't know.
Can't say right. But
considering the game group, it was not a breach of etiquette, but on that topic, it was actually hilarious. There was a couple who showed up to a game, and they were playing siblings, brother and sister, but in real life, you know, the boyfriend and girlfriend. And they would start, you know, talking about what their character's doing with their sibling and actually start filling each other up and kissing at the game table just to make that extra level of uncomfortable hit.
at that point, that's social faux pas, not necessarily.
No, it wasn't social faux pas. They were doing it just to mess with the other players. But, well, depending on your game group, it could be a social faux pas. And again, it falls down to communication.
Right. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of this kind of communicate, and we cannot parse that enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not all this section's meant to be. Now, like, creating a character. If you're trying to learn a system, it's generally advised to try to pick something that's a simpler way to play. Something like, out of the core classes, a rogue, because they're fairly sneaky. They're a little bit one-trick pony in combat. Sneak around, shank stab, or, you know, shoot it, right? That's what they're for. There are a lot of variations and ways to do that. But it's a fairly simple way to understand the game, is to understand something simpler.
Yeah.
Like, going in and out of the gate, your first character is a wizard. If you've got a good set of teachers and a fairly forgiving group, you can get away with it. But wizards in particular, and casters, or like FX things, you know, whatever they might be, they have a way of grinding the game down as a general rule, unless you know your shit and are hot on the ball.
I think one of the biggest ones I'm going to jump onto as far as gaming etiquette, though, Because, like, GMs, like you mentioned, GMs will usually give you a free pass on your first character. They might make it for you.
Or guide you,
but after that, you're pretty much expected to pretty much do it on your own. But pretty much, whatever the GM says goes. Don't argue with the GM, especially during game. That's a huge faux pas of gaming etiquette, is to get in the GM's face when they're trying to run things.
And now, there are ways to do this politely. Like, Goblin had an instance, you know, fairly early on in one of our sessions where he's like, okay, I borfed the rule. How do we want to proceed? You know, he brought it up in a diplomatic way.
Well, that's because I borfed the rule and I wanted communication to be established, and I'd rather run my games in a diplomatic manner.
Exactly. And a lot of, you know, like, if, you know, the storyteller gets a rule wrong as written in the book, a very polite way to do it, to point that out, is, hey, are we doing, like, a homebrew, or are we doing the book? That brings up their attention that something needs to be communicated.
Yeah.
And from there, the discussion proceeds as it proceeds. But I'm going to make a note of this. Can we discuss this after game, where you're not putting them on blast in front of the players?
And on the same token as well, like you mentioned Thief, and a lot of new players who play Thieves will do this. And I cannot stress enough for Thieves, don't try to steal the other party member's shit. So many times I've seen somebody like, oh, I'm playing the Thief, it's what my character would do. And I'm like, you're taking the gold out of the barbarian's belt pouch while you're both are in the same tavern. This is a great way to start an inter-party fight and never have anything accomplished.
And then on the other side of this, a thief knows when not to steal, generally. Mm-hmm. They know, like, look, if I'm trying to ingratiate myself with these people, I don't want to fuck them over. Yeah. Generally speaking, thieves are smart like that in real life.
Unfortunately, players tend
not
to
so much.
Try to get away with whatever they can, roll dice as many times as they can. So, Blasphemous, you're being all quiet over there and shit.
Oh,
I got a question for you.
Okay.
The game you ran here recently is one of your first delvings into DMing.
Well, major delving.
Major delving.
It's Roll 2 on this world with a bit more refinement. Hell, I went to Donjon and got a full world map to have a constant, this is my world, this are the things I'm dealing with.
Without naming names, did anybody break etiquette?
Or come overall, close? Overall, not that I caught offhand.
I did see a phone out.
Yes, well, this rule was lax because someone forgot their character sheet.
Oh, so the electronics rule was not enforced.
No, but I did warn that person that in future I'm going to enforce electronics are strictly prohibited. The exceptions are, you know, something's going down or phone calls from people that usually entail emergencies. And due to the hour, it's not like we're going to be getting hit up by telemarketers and the like.
Still, how would communication devices like phones be a etiquette breach? Do tell.
They're distractions. I mean, you can be like, oh, well, my character sheet's on here. And then while no one's looking, close or minimize the window on your device and then open up, I don't know,
Facebook.
Facebook, Candy Crush, any number of games. Hell, you could be, you know, sexting with someone for all I know and just fully not engaged in the experience.
Hey, I do not mind when people start sexting Blunt Force gamers. As the admin, I'm all about it, dude. I'll answer anybody who sexts me. Yeah, whatever.
You have fun with that.
Yeah.
Well, you deal with that one.
I'm just waiting for it to start arriving. But yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just one of the things is, I mean, you gamed back in the day when cell phones weren't a thing.
Oh, I miss those days.
And nowadays, the most we can do is try to severely prohibit that in game. Like, I recently fixed up the gaming area. There's this nice big green plastic bowl, and if it comes down to it, I will have people put their electrical devices in there. Be like, all right, as soon as I see you reach for it, we better be on break, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, again, this falls into communication. We're cycling back, and, you know, not to jump on Blasphemous shit for anything, but
Jellybean!
Well, father. You know, to add on, I guess, to intent. But, like, at that point, that's a house rule. Like, how do you deal with house rules? Well, you communicate with them, with the people involved. And if you don't have a clear line of communication, get one.
I've always, as a GM, tried to establish a clear line of communication with players. I'd tell them, if they have any questions, comments, concerns, grievances, anything, to take it up with me off the table.
Yeah.
Outside of game, if I made a rules call that they don't feel is fair, talk to me after game.
I mean, a good way you've done that is right away when we first got together to game, what, almost 3 years ago now?
Something like that.
You made a Facebook group. Using the distractions that are usually distractions in-game, outside of game are great. Create a private Facebook group, put all your people on there and be like, all right, these messages are up for all time. You know, DM is the one who controls the page, can delete anything they wish, but everybody can communicate. Hell, I was able to communicate that we're all buying pizza.
Yeah.
So everybody brought a little bit of money and we got pizza.
Well, the Facebook group that I started for our game group was primarily for out-of-game conversation.
Mm.
You know, so people, I'd have an avenue to communicate with people. They could leave me a message. I could come back several hours later and be like, oh, message, better check that. Or you guys, hey, who wants to pitch on pizza on Friday?
Right.
You know, it just opened another avenue of communication.
And it helps people when it's like, hey, like we scheduled game. We had to delay it because real life, and then we were supposed to do a meet and greet weeks before, had to cancel that because real life crept up, you know, someone life or death situation. But definitely, ooh, that's a good one that falls into communication is scheduling. You know, try and communicate your schedule as best as you can. Like right now we're in a once or twice a month if people are feeling it game scenario. We were doing every week for a while, and then we went to every other week.
Was mostly Narcissus' fault, doing every week.
Because
I don't disagree with that.
Hey, I needed my away from people time.
That's fair.
I need time to catch the story up, because these guys blew through my first act and totally picked up the side quest without me having to handhold for them.
That's nice. Actually, another good one that's for etiquette, character sheet.
Always have your character
sheet. Always have your character sheet.
And keep it nice.
Keep it legible. Kazer can.
Hey, I can read it. That's what matters.
The GM needs to read it. Yeah, that's GM what matters.
I'm also getting better on that front. Y'all are harsher on it.
Yeah, I'm going to go down to the store and buy one of those little kindergarten writing pads so you can practice your ABCs.
Fuck right off.
I know. But character sheet management is extremely important for our listeners who... want to convey that message to other people. That yes, the professionals agree. Take that character sheet, get yourself a cheap-ass $1 peachy, and stuff it in there. They're do not stuff cheap. Your character sheet in the book. Do not stuff it in between the books. Have a specific set place for your character sheet if you're prone to losing it, so you will stop losing it, because it frustrates the shit out of GMs and other players if you lose stuff, especially if you happen to be holding gear and or equipment. Yeah, lists. You happen to be holding lists of stuff that the other players are relying on, and you're like, it's in here somewhere. Well, guess what? 9 times out of 10, your GM will be like, if you don't have it on paper, you don't have it.
Here's a good one about that, having it on paper. So, you guys talked about how unruly it can be to play a caster on your first character. Here is a tip, no matter what you are playing, whether it's just, I roll dice and hit things, or I'm going to pull a spell out of this and this and this and be awesome. A buddy of ours, who's been on the podcast, he literally goes and grabs the digital copies of books and prints out the specific pages that have to do with his character, highlights it, writes little notes, and has all that stuff. So he has it by the book what it is, and you can get a binder. $5 will get you a 3-ring binder.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have to be a great one. And you just put all your copies of pages. You can hole punch those, or what he does is he's got the plastic ones that hold whole pages, and just slip that in there. So you can slip 2 of them in there, you know, double side print, whatever. And it allows you to have the book reference there. You can get the little thumb tabs on the side that are permanently attached to the page. And it's a perfect way to keep your stuff organized. And even if you're playing an unruly class, something that requires you to back and forth between, a dozen pages, you can have everything there without having to carry around 100 pounds in books.
It's true. So, yeah, character sheet management is highly imperative. As far as gaming table etiquette goes, it is.
Oh, God. One more thing. Sorry to be, like, all here all of a sudden, but I was quiet there for a while because I was contemplating, and you guys kind of hit the points pretty well.
Oh.
When you sit down at a table, or in our case, around a couple of couches, do not take up more space than you absolutely have to. Do not bring, like, a box of snacks and, like, 3 backpacks and look like you're moving in. Bring your gaming stuff, your snacks if you need to, because sometimes groups will just all together pitch in on snacks. And if you got to bring, like, a pillow to sit on or something, you know, for your back, or you got to lay down, designate your space and be like, all right, I'm taking up this space for these reasons. Because I've seen people, not just our games, but at our LGS, people would game. And they just bring in, 2 cases of soda for themselves. Wouldn't even share it. and they would just set it up and have like walled in area, and they're encroaching on the person next to them, and the end of the table that was supposed to be for general stuff is now taken over. Or my favorite one, I was at a different shop, and this one guy comes into game, and he's late. He has all this stuff, and he has like run out to the car like 3 times. And after he gets set up, he's basically pushed the DM screen back and almost off the table. It was glorious to watch, but I would have hated to be in that game.
Oh, yeah. Punctuality is definitely key for etiquette, and it doesn't matter if you're doing tabletop gaming or online gaming. If you're doing a raid at 6 o'clock in an MMO, or if your game group is starting at 5:30, and game groups never start on time, so you know it's going to be 6 o'clock, still try to show up at 5:30 when the game group is getting together. If your raid is going to be at 6 o'clock, try to be there on time, so the raid master has less to fucking contend with.
The only time it sucks to be there early is when you're showing up to someone's house directly, because they might not be ready for you. Or home yet, like it was a couple times for our game session. Like,
yeah.
Where's Goblin? Oh, he's down the street getting smoked.
He's down the street getting smoked because he's walking home from work.
Yes.
Yes, that has happened, but I needed the money.
Don't we all?
Yeah, punctuality is definitely an etiquette thing, and it doesn't matter what game you're playing. If other people are involved in the project, punctuality, for fuck's sake.
Or at least good communication if you can't be punctual.
Okay, communication and punctuality. I'm going to be late. Call it in. Let them know.
Let them know why, if it's relevant.
Yeah. Because I have seen games happen where somebody has just not been punctual at any game session ever. And it just, I don't know how to describe it, but it really made the start of the game feel like
grinding on.
It felt kind of disrespectful, actually.
Yeah.
You know, because you got 4 other people sitting around the table. The GM's got his shit out. And 30, 45 minutes later, the last guy shows up, and it's every time there's an excuse or some shit. It's like, dude, every fucking week? Really?
Yeah, at that point, you're not getting respect.
Yeah. And then you reschedule, and it's like, oh my god, he's still late, and we reschedule for him.
At that point, you know, at that point, the game group might start talks about politely asking them to not.
Or impolitely. Yeah, because if somebody... If somebody does breach etiquette to the point where they're like, oh, well, I can't be there till 7, even though game starts at 6:30, everybody else goes, okay, well, we'll reschedule, and then suddenly that said player shows up at 7:30 instead, people are going to be like, what the fuck, man? We moved our hours just for you, and now you're still not even
on time
pulling your in?
Yeah, and, you know, at that point, it's equal parts the storyteller as the group to communicate.
Yeah.
Perhaps as a whole, perhaps off to the side, depends on your group, but to communicate, this is not okay, for whatever reason, and whatever the breach might be, this is not okay, here's why, and then, you know, here's how we're going to have you fix this, and if you can't do that, there will be other repercussions. Now, you know, there's all this stuff about etiquette, and then there's this whole new player aspect. What do you do for a new character? Well, if you're first making a character, the best thing to do is start with an idea.
Our next segment in 15 minutes.
Oh, is that where we're going?
Oh, dude, our next segment, remember, that's all new player tips.
Right.
Right.
This one's general etiquette.
This one's general etiquette, dude.
Right.
This is for players, DMs, and everybody alike.
Yeah, I got one more.
Oh, you got
one. I know I'm kind of kicking in here in the end, but
hey,
you got to get that engine rolling.
Get the engine going.
Fat guy up a hill, just think that. But, so if you screw up, or you see someone else screw up in-game, like they flub a rule or a roll. If someone flubs a roll, like they roll their die and pick it up right away so no one else can see it, kind of raise question, but mainly leave that to DM.
I'm going to actually cover that in my upcoming web series of how to cheat.
Okay.
Because that's another gaming etiquette thing. Like you just said, if somebody's dropping their die and snatching it up super fast, yeah, that's a red sign. Cheating at the game table happens in many various forms. And it is a guaranteed way to get your GM pissed.
In a hurry.
Maybe not the other players, because sometimes the other players, if you're cheating on their behalf as well as yours, may not be as pissy, but the GM will certainly get livid quick.
And if you roll a crit, fail, or success, have someone next to you confirm. And don't always have the same person, especially your significant other, be the only one to check that.
Right.
Be like, hey, guys, look, shine a light on it, tell them to come over, something. And, I mean, I've got a pretty good group going with my new game where everyone's like, roll, and it's right there. Well, 2 of the people who showed up are really good about that because they're sitting right there, and they're just like, bam, look at it.
Yeah. Open dice is a great way to communicate that you're being honest at the game table. If you're rolling dice in a manner that everybody at the table has easy access to see them. Even if you're not at a gaming table, but in a setting like ours where you're in a living room, you can still roll your die, and if other people can go, oh yeah, they can look and go, it's legit.
And don't do the tiny goddamn fairy dice where they're...
That's also going to be in my upcoming video about cheating. Tiny dice.
Like, tiny dice are cool.
Tiny dice are...
have them readable, not black on black. Even though you're like, oh, well, one of them's charcoal. Tiny dice are a pain, and if you have a rolling thing, like a rolling tray, don't just, like, hold it in your hand and roll. Set it down on something, roll, and be like, yeah, yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, I joke around with some giant red dice, which were for my little goblin, May Peck Peck, rest in peace.
Still bringing him up a year later.
Dude, he was awesome, year. And then was given life.
Actually, that's a good Geometica thing, though, is, like, heralding back on the thief.
Yeah.
And going into tiny dice and shit. If other players are getting frustrated by your activities, again, this also crosses over into, like, the MMO world. If other people are getting put out by your activities, maybe it's time to rethink what you're doing. Whether it's, you know, I'm rolling tiny dice and the GM goes, I really don't like that. That's pretty much a clear and concise message from the GM that you should get bigger dice. If you're in an MMO and you're not playing your class effectively, and somebody says, hey, you know, you should really learn how to chain pull better. Maybe that's some advice that you'll be able to find better groups if you learn to chain pull better. You have to up your game and play within the boundaries of who you're playing with, because it's it. Whether it's in an MMO or tabletop gaming, you're in a group effort. Mm-hmm. And annoying people by stealing their shit as a thief, or annoying whoever's running the game, it degrades the entire experience for everyone.
And to a lesser extent, there's this whole idea of immersion.
Now, immersive as fuck.
Immersion is kind of a fun concept. A lot of storytellers want a full... or as full of an immersion as they can get, which is not always going to be real. I mean, you're not going to see a dragon walking down the street, so you kind of have to play it by the mind.
Hold on, Chinese New Year, bro.
That's about the exception. But, you know, on the same token, you know, you're participating as a character in a world that is populated entirely by one person, or maybe two, depending on the game. And having to interact within the boundaries of the world, because effectively you are acting. And so, you know, ease yourself into acting, do it how you need to, but get, like, that's advice, you know, for new players and for etiquette, is be comfortable with doing a little bit of thespianship to bring the character to life. Especially if it's required, like a roleplay heavy group will especially be keen on this. Versus, you know, Beatstick constantly going, ah, I hit it with a stick!
At the same token, on that topic though, is just finding that nice comfortable medium. Yes. Because if you're overly thespian, again, it falls down to communication. If you go through a 5-minute discussion about how your character has flakes of gold in their eyes, people are going to get bored. So it's with communication. You got to read the other players around the group or whatever group you're playing online or tabletop. You have to figure out your boundaries with them.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, this is a topic that's been brought up by us before. We're really big advocates of communication.
Yeah.
For example, in villain tips, right, is discussing the boundaries. Like, some people are not coached with clowns. Other people are not coached with rape, or, you know...
I like clowns. I like rape. I like clowns who rape. Because it scares the shit out of you guys when I'm running game.
See?
Then again, on that topic, your group, some people, like you said, don't like clowns. Some people don't like rape. Boundaries.
And, you know...
Etiquette, boundaries.
Yeah. It's starting to get into a point at that point where you're communicating to make sure that they're still having fun. Like, it, you know... Hong Kong rape clown could be a very fun concept for you, but someone who's triggered by either of those two things is going to be very off-put, and they're not going to be having fun,
which is the whole point. Which is another reason that when I start games, I ask specifically the players right out of the gate, do you want a PG-13 game? Do you want rated R? Do you like blood and gore everywhere? Do you want...
The Book of Erotic Fantasy?
Do you want to get Book of Erotic Fantasy included in here? Because some people don't want sex in their game. Some people do. Some people don't want a Conan-like experience of, you know, that dark, gritty fantasy setting with you know, heads flying off. Some people want more Dungeons & Dragons the cartoon. It comes campy. Down... campy. It does. It comes down to communication with the rest of the party, because there are limits as to what specific people in the group have. That's why when I pulled that shit on Thoric, with the things crawling on his skin, I did not specifically ever once at that point say spiders. But I described the feeling of what it'd be like to have a bunch of spiders, knowing that he does have a phobia of spiders.
Which, you know, at that point, that's the storyteller needling the player.
Yeah.
Which is in part what he's supposed to do. And, you know, again, a part of this is to understand that some of the agency of your character will fall on the storyteller's description, right? There are storytellers who will, you know, ask you, and I think this is a fun concept, is, okay, describe how you're killing this. Whoa, I get to be the storyteller for a moment. And you get, like, this, you know, minute, maybe, explanation, if you're being long-winded, about how you killed this thing, you know, whatever it might be.
You just killed the rape clown.
On the other side of things, you know, like with the critical fumble, that's a very easy moment for your storyteller to go, okay, so what you went to do was this big grand overhand swing, and like the cartoons, someone pinched your blade, and your hands went forward, and the blade did not. All of a sudden, you know, that's easy to feel like you're being attacked for it, but at the same time, it's just a matter of this is how your luck played for the moment.
You know, actually, that is a really good thing that you brought up about agency. It's important for the because, you know, we're talking more about player etiquette right now, and I think what we should end off on this segment before going to break and letting people listen to another crazy-ass song is talk about player agency, because this is actually more etiquette for the GM. And the GM should never, ever, 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 I cannot stress enough, screw over player agency 100%. Always leave a way out, because for some reason players, no matter what character they're playing, the moment you take agency away from them, you set up a dichotomy of us versus them, enemy versus enemy. The moment you have the town guard put shackles on the player character, they will do anything and everything to escape, even the stupidest shit possible. And once you take away that free will, that player agency from the player, as a GM, you have set up that you are no longer a guiding force in the narrative. You are now the enemy. And that player will try to defeat you at every fucking turn possible until they are free again. And even after they get free, they will hold a grudge.
Right. And this is, you know, to flip back on the player side of this, a good way to think about this is if the storyteller is describing something that your character is doing, think of it like a cutscene. You know, your video games have these things where you're doing your thing, you're playing the game, and then it switches to a cutscene, and you lose control for a sec. You get to watch.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you get to button mash.
The thing that players need to remember on that one, when the DM does intrude on player agency, what a good GM will do is they'll nudge player agency. They'll, like you said, a cutscene. They'll just interfere just that little bit. They won't take away from everything, but there is shit that happens that we cannot control.
Right.
Even as, you know, player GM agency who are sitting on the table, somebody might get the hiccups. It didn't come from a roll. They were just eating too fast. Or somebody stumbles and falls. Basically, what happens to the character is, in game, the GM is playing the all-seeing, all-dancing reality maker, and all he's saying is, hey, look, this is out of your control for the moment because instinct has taken over or circumstances. But a GM who goes straight into there and goes, well, your character wakes up and you're too zombie-like and you start sleepwalking, that's going to tick off a player character. Unless they specifically say in their background they sleepwalk.
Right. And, you know, at that point, it's an interaction with the rest of the players. It's like, look, your companion just woke up and shuffled out of tent. They're still snoring and they're meandering around. What are you going to do?
The first time I had a player call me out on this one was, shit, ancient time.
Oh, back when dinosaurs still rolled.
This was shortly after Dungeons & Dragons started being published in color. You know? And we didn't have to adjust the rabbit ears to get a good reception on our stat blocks. I actually had myself called out on this one a long time ago. And it was one of those weird random happenstances. I had two players who were reaching for an object at the exact same time. They're standing side by side on the battle map. And all I said was, you know, as you both reach for it, I had to make both dexterity checks, but they both made the exact same number. So I'm like, as you both reach for it, your fingers lace together. You can feel the other person's fingers rubbing in between yours, and it feels a little sensual. because they failed their roll. So, you know, you got to add that level of discomfort to it. And one of the players is like, dude, whatever. Thanks for playing my character for me. I wasn't playing your character. You made a roll, and that's what happened. Sometimes shit happens out of your control. And, yeah, the trust between a GM and a player needs to be there for the GM to actually...
play with agency a little.
Just to play with agency a little bit. But as far as GMs are concerned, any GM who overrides agency, especially blunt force gamers style, needs to tone that back a bit.
Now, on the flip side, again, remember that the storyteller is not typically trying to take control of your character away from you when they're doing things that affect your agency.
Yeah, GM has enough on his plate.
He's got literally the entire world that your character is standing on, all of the DDs, all of the NPCs, all of the monsters, all of the biomes, all of the creatures, and all of that on his plate. He doesn't need one more.
Yeah. All right, so I believe that covers the basic etiquette things that people should know. I mean, it's mostly common sense.
Communicate, be punctual, don't be a dick.
Keep your shit organized.
Keep your shit organized.
And interrupt Kazer Ken whenever possible.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard that. and, you know, be ready. Try to be prepared as best you can for your turn, your action, your line of thought. You have to understand that most of the time combat is not this turn, this turn, this turn. It's not stop motion. It's not like a claymation film, like, I don't know, Wallace and Gromit. It's fluid. So everything that you're doing is happening kind of in tandem with other things that are going on. It's just a thing to remember.
Yep.
You said stop motion, and all that brought back was a really bad Clash of the Titans. It's so good.
Dude, Ray Harryhausen is a god. Music! And we're back.
So that last mix, that was one of your own, or was that one you pulled out of your archive?
Oh, that's all me, dude. All
right.
That's cool. All me.
Nice.
I do my own music.
Gonna have to have you do a mixtape for me, then.
Oh, God damn it. I've already got enough projects, God damn it.
Oh, you just load them onto my phone and listen to them when I go walking to work.
Sure enough. Download my music and tell me how video gamey it sounds. Anyhow, let's get to the topic at hand. For new players who are brand new to looking for a D&D, Starfinder, Pathfinder, Vampire, Rifts, Rollmaster, Amber, Cinnabar group.
Or Laser Metal or D&Dizzle.
Or Laser Metal and D&Dizzle. Because I, too, wish to bust a cap at some elf's ass. So one of the questions I hear very often, I've actually heard it twice, which is why we're doing this segment, is somebody has always popped up at the convention going, hey, how do I find a game group? Actually, a really easy thing to do, but apparently not so much. So,
a lot of the time, from what I've found, most of the time local game stores, places that interact with the community that would be playing those games, typically things like if they sell books for a given role-playing system, the chances are good they at least have a tie or a communication line with someone who is playing.
9 times out of 10, yeah, it's true, is to pay attention to the local game stores. It's, I know, old-fashioned as fuck, but usually a game store,
some restaurants and stuff, too. Like, if they're very casual, long-term sitting restaurants, there are people who will have game sessions there.
Yeah, ironically enough, I've had people who have been listening in on conversations about gaming sitting a booth away at places like Denny's. You know, and they'll turn around, it, random stranger, they'll be like, hey, you guys talking about Werewolf the Apocalypse? And they're like, yeah. And next thing we know, boom, new gamer sitting at the table.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does happen, but if you're looking...
If you're looking, the game stores is a really good place to start. There are also plethoras of localized, like, Facebook groups. Northwest Role Players Guild or something like that, right?
Yeah, but they're a close guild. We're all a part of that.
It's an example, not necessarily the only one. But, you know, if you have someone who is already interested in that topic matter, say a friend who's kind of been hyping you up for it or something, chances are good they're in a group. Or if there are enough of, if you find just a group of friends and you pitch the idea to them, you can start a group. That is a very easy thing to do as long as you are, again, communicating.
Yeah, it's true. If you're in an area where you do already have established contacts, you could be sitting down with a friend or two and be like, you know, I've been looking over these books and it seems like it'd be a lot of fun. And one of the best selling points to do that when you're talking to friends actually is the fact that your average D&D book is about $45 now.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So that's the price of two people to go in to see a movie for one night. And your average game session could last 4 hours. And if it's a module, you're looking at, I don't know, about $10 for a module. So right there, that's $55. That's two people going to a movie for one evening with popcorn, with drinks, for 2 hours of entertainment. Whereas if you buy a module and the core rule book for any role-playing game, really, you're looking at easily a month to a month and a half, 4 hours each, of entertainment value time. So you're getting more return on value for your money.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also a whole lot of social interaction. Like, I would not have known most of these fuckers we're in the podcast with.
Yeah, well...
Sans the gaming table.
That is a definite fringe benefit to gaming, is typically when you're sitting down in the social aspect, you're going to meet people who are going to be pretty much, you know, friends for a decade, if not lifelong, that normally you wouldn't interact with, and what brings you together is gaming. One guy, for example, when Scott had his shop down south, we would go down there, and some random old dude showed up, had just retired, was recently widowed, was looking for something to do. So he basically went down to the local game store, heard there was a game going on, rolled up a character after getting an invite, and sat down with us. So it really wasn't, from the game store approach, it's not that hard, and for looking for a game,
that's definitely the easiest way to do it.
That is definitely the easiest way to do it. You could also, with the power of electronics and the internet nowadays, like you mentioned, Facebook is a viable option because there's all sorts of groups on there. You could also try
Meetup or various others.
Plebit.
I know people who have used Craigslist, even.
Yeah, I've heard of Craigslist stories myself.
Yeah, and you know, there are some people, you know, you might find it in passing, like Plenty of Fish or other dating sites. People can just casually list, hey, I'm into this type of game. Well, all of a sudden, you have an avenue. If you're wanting to talk to someone, they've just labeled themselves for you to talk to, because that's pretty much direct invite. Most gamers are not going to shy away from you talking about games with them.
Yeah, that's actually a somewhat valid point. I don't know. I've never gone down that route because, you know...
Neither have I.
My right hand would get jealous, but dating sites, if you put down that you're a gamer, you know, you're already there. You've established that you have a common interest with whoever contacts you. Instead of being like, oh, I'm, you know, 5'7", 120 pounds, I love to play hockey and watch sci-fi shows or whatever the fuck they put on those things. But if you specifically put down, hey, I like to play role-playing games, I gear towards these classes, and I'd really like to find somebody who's in one of these groups so we can get to know each other better, you're kind of giving yourself an avenue to meet this person, not only if you're doing the dating thing, but a common interest, and even if shit doesn't work out, you still got a game group.
Or at least an in to a game group.
That's thinking outside the bun right there.
Well, my favorite way, which is the main way I got into stuff, was go to a convention.
Yeah, those are really good. I mean,
Pathfinder Society, you can literally just find random game systems and people that a lot of the times are in your local area, and then boom.
Oh, yeah. Definitely one of the older ones to do was the RPGA Network, which was the Dungeons & Dragons find a game group kind of thing. The Pathfinder Society, same deal.
Yeah.
Join one of these associations.
Adventures League, you know.
Here's a fun one and shameless plug. Our buddies over at the Northwest Nerdcast went pretty in-depth into this and brought up some avenues I didn't even know about. But plus, a good thing about going to cons when you're trying to find this stuff out is there's always at least one or two panels that are about role-playing.
Yeah.
How do you create a character? How do you create this type of thing? How do you, as a GM, take someone's character idea and just have it fit in your world, not molest it too much?
And then, you know, another thing about conventions that's really cool is you can try a lot of role-playing games at the convention if you're willing to invest the time.
Yeah, you can try new stuff.
Like, for instance, I know Dungeons & Dragons, for the past 4 years at PAX, when I've gone, have always had a set-up area, which is this massive room full of tables, with dedicated people who are running basically a module with a little bit of cheapo pre-con characters, pre-constructed characters. It's like, hey, which guy do you want to play? And then we'll kind of, you're going to doctor him up and make him yours, and then we're going to go. And I'm going to tell you a story with those characters.
Exactly. So the best route to finding a game group really is hit your local game store if you don't have one. Try the internet. If the internet doesn't work, well, then try non-standard avenues or join an association like the Pathfinder Society or RPGA.
Or even if you just have a bookstore, a Barnes & Noble or something.
Yeah.
If they have those books, I bet you dollars to donuts that someone that works there is into those or have had a lot of people ask about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, they mentioned something about this. Yeah.
Hell, you could get lucky and there could be somebody shopping for those specific books right then and there and just strike up a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the general rule is, if it sells the books for a role-playing system, you can find, through the store, through people who are around, people who are also interested in that system. And that could be enough to start a group or find a group.
Yeah, It's fairly easy to find the group. You just gotta, you know, keep one ear to the ground and, you know, do a little bit of footwork. And typically any new player who's looking for a group can find one eventually.
Ooh, another fun one. It's actually an online deal to do that. I know it's not new, but it was, you actually just sit down at your computer and everyone's connected that way. And you're just like, all right, hit the button that says I'm rolling this die. And it's a whole online way to do that, you know. Get stuck in your house because you're sick, you know, something like that. A way to meet people to do that from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to go to someone's house or a shop you don't know or travel.
Yeah, that's true. There are also the alternatives of using
things like Roll 20.
Yeah, like Roll 20.
There you go. That's what.
Yeah, and you know there are a bunch of them, but like the few of the great things on that is they also a lot of those sites will help advertise, and they're like if a session is named something like New Players Welcome, the chances are good. It's a really nice, generally accepting DM who's willing to help guide you through character creation and all that jazz. Not always the case, but generally speaking.
I'm not a nice GM. I'm a dick.
You also don't tend to advertise New players accepted.
Well, that's because new players don't like to be TPK'd every fucking every round, and I like to TPK.
See? And oh, that's no, why you don't tend to advertise that.
Oh, no, wait. I don't TPK. I just let you guys kill yourselves. Anyway, for other new player tips, let's branch into Character Creation 101. How about that?
I'll let you guys start that one off. You got more experience than me.
Well, I'm going to start with have an idea. I am in the process, like, we're going into our second session something like next week from the time of recording this, where three of my coworkers are just getting into D&D for the first time. One of them, like, a couple of them came up with ideas that were pretty unique. Other ones were like, yeah, sure, it's a little bit clony of, say, anime, but that's okay. You draw your inspiration from where you draw it from, and nobody can really care. You're not trying to monetize it, so generally speaking, it's fine. And if you have fun, then it's fine. But one of these people, no freaking clue about anything about the game, I want to be an elf druid. All right, yeah. Let's do it. Like, if you have that idea, and not necessarily, like, this whole drawn-out backstory, I mean, I have a little bit of experience, but I can talk with the GM of this particular one, this person, for, like, an hour, hour and a half, and all of a sudden I have a worked-out backstory for a character that was just dice on a paper.
Well, the inspiration for a new player is going to spawn from where it spawns. There's no doubt about that. I actually had a really long conversation with a guy who was playing essentially a Drizzt ripoff.
Well,
the thing is, I understand it's a popular character, and as much as I hate Drizzt, I fucking despise Drizzt. In fact, if Drizzt was in my living room right now, I would gouge out his eyes and introduce him to the rape clown from our earlier segment. However, that's what he was playing off of. This was his inspiration.
This would be a neat thing to do.
It's what he had to work with. And I'm like, look, dude, you're going to be forgiven on this one. You know, later down the line, you know, try to switch it up a little bit, you know, come up with new ideas and everything. That's what role-playing is about. But for new players, it is absolutely fine if the only thing that you can conjure for your inspiration is Buzz Lightyear. Roll with it.
Yeah.
If it's Buzz Lightyear in D&D, well, shit, you're playing a paladin. Whatever. Roll with it.
Yeah, and, you know, on the flip side of this, like, same group, right? One of them is playing it's called Soulbound or a Warforged. Long story short, it's a soul trapped in a machine that's human-shaped. Doesn't need to eat, sleep, breathe, doesn't need to shut down for a little bit, but generally speaking, and this particular character is a monk, so he goes around punching things with his metal fists. Well, that's a whole lot of Alphonse Elric from Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
Pretty much legitimately right out of the gate. Yeah, not a bad player, thing, yeah, but, you know, if he's having fun, he's having fun with it.
Yeah, new players are going to take their inspiration from where they get it, and first two characters, once you get through about the third, you're starting to push it. But the first character or two characters, you can get away with almost blatant plagiaristic ripoffs. And the rest of the group and the GM are going to forgive you on that one. But start feeling your way around the role-playing setups, the books, everything, that's when it's time to start really branching out your ideas and start formulating your own stuff.
Right. Now, let's see. An example of this. My buddy built a monk who was a blacksmith. He kind of worked the story out to be he was a perfectionist. He was trying to create the perfect blade and had this flaw where he would, if he caught a single flaw, it doesn't matter how big or small that flaw was, nope, gone, chuck the whole thing, start over. He was a monk. He'd run around hitting people with his fist, basically. Or the, you know, one of the swords that he kept on him for, you know, defending himself. Because he had the training for it. This character was completely out of left field, because, you know, one of the things that, like, one of the backdrops gave him was a tool proficiency in crafting tools. So he's like, huh, I'm going to make a story out of that. It doesn't take a whole lot to kind of develop out a unique character once you've gotten the feel for what characters are. Which is why, you know, 2 to 3 is kind of the cutoff for where you can,
yeah,
you know, blatantly rip off people, because you're still learning that.
I would also suggest for new players, and even some more experienced players, when your character does something, don't say it in the first person, especially during action sequences. If you really want to nail your character's name, their appearance and stuff, into the other players in the GM alike, so we're going to use a particular barbarian from the past on this one. So, if I barge in, I've got my double-headed axe, and I'm, like, ready to kill some undead bastards. And I barge in through the door, and I'm like, all right, here's what I do. I barge in the door, and I swing at the first thing I see that's not living. I'm going to make these rolls and I'm going to own it. Okay, well, that's basically me saying I'm doing it, which is great to be invested in my character like that because I'm in my character shell. But on the other hand, if I repeatedly introduce my character or say my character's taking actions, it will develop kind of this weird resonance with the other people. So I go, okay, so Grognak breaks in the door. Whatever he sees first, Grognak is going to take a swing at it and screw that thing over.
Hard.
So basically, during action sequences like this, I'm describing what my character's doing, but I'm introducing him by name. So this kind of gives a weird psychological hint to the other players that when they refer to me as the player, they're going to look over and be like, hey, Grognak, what are you going to do about this? And be like, well, Grognak's going to kick down that door just like last time. So people will be more inclined to talk to your character by their name if you do that kind of little trick.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a little kind of theater of the mind trick as well, because what this does is this cements who your character is. This helps the DM, because he's like, Grognak, make a wisdom save. Or, you know, okay, Grognak, you want to do this? I'm going to have you, I don't know, athletics to jump across and, you know, while you're screaming bloody murder and swinging this thing around like a helicopter blade.
Yeah, while you're jumping over battle, swinging your axe like a helicopter blade. Grognak uses his axe as a makeshift wind blade to keep hovering over the rest of the battlefield. Yeah, that'll work.
It's, you know, it's wacky, and what, you know, like, that's, it tricks people into addressing them in the proper way.
Yeah.
Like, when you're dialoguing, use the first person. But when you're doing things that are visible from the outside, you're helping paint the picture in everyone's mind.
That's actually a really good method to go at it, is I'm in the character Grognak right now, I'm talking to Kazarkan. Kazarkan, come here, we need the fire built. Okay, that works, but if it's an action sequence, you know, then I go, Grognak points at Kazarkan and says we need the fire built for the catapult. So it does differentiate whether I'm talking in first person or describing a scene in third person.
Right, and, you know, another good example of this, say, you know, Kazarkan is a, like, a small little thing, like a dwarf. Well, Grognak's a big beefy dude, and we're gonna play dwarf tossing. So Grognak looks down at Kazarkan. You ready? Yeah. Grognak picks up Kazarkan and hurls him.
So yeah, differentiating your character in a third to first person format helps paint a more of a picture to the other players, and especially during action sequences or descriptive sequences, it will help cement your character's name in the other players, and you'll start being referred to by the other players as your character's name. It's actually pretty phenomenal to watch. Another thing to do, and I know Blasphemous doesn't do this enough. Take notes. It's a good habit to get in early.
Oh, by the gods, yes. Please take notes.
The more notes you take, the better. It actually makes the GM's job easier in the long run, too. But if you run into an NPC that's a blacksmith, and even if he's inconsequential, you know, maybe like a little side character journal is going on, just write down, you know, you met Talsigar the blacksmith in the city of Ivansrud.
He was all right.
He was all right. Prices were a bit high, though. But if your character's ever returned to that town, the GM's job would be made easier because you visit that town and you're like, well, I've got the gold now to afford that sword I wanted from Talsigar, the blacksmith. Remember him? And the GM would be like, oh, wow. Because you're taking notes, and the more notes you take, I mean, for a long, protracted campaign, it gets kind of harrowing, but the earlier you start taking notes, the better.
Yeah, and, you know, on that note, like, a good way to do this, buy yourself a little composition book, a little, like, college rule book. Like, we're not even talking a big one, just a little dinky one. Spend, like, $2.
Well, that's if they're playing a wizard, Jesus.
If you're playing a wizard, you're probably going to want a second one.
Yep.
Just for your spells and shit, or things like spell cards or whatever, what have you. But the what this does is you can just go notes on the front in big, nasty letters or whatever.
Yeah, I used to do that with characters. I'd have a notebook set aside. It had double-sided pages, but they were basically just clear sheets. And the first four pages was all just character, all the stuff right out of the book I needed from the four-page character sheet. And everything after that was actually custom pages. I put notes for what holdings I have, notes for contacts, notes for adversaries who are still out in the open on the run, notes for guilds that I've come in contact with, notes on landscape. Shit that would directly involve my character later down the line, I would take a note down on it, and I had this binder, so late game, I would flip open that binder, and I'd be like, oh, I know that company because I've had previous business dealings with them, so they're changing their tune with their public face. And, you know, the GM, they forget things, players often forget things, but by bringing these notes up, you can be basically get the GM on the spot sometimes, especially if you're a little sadistic, and be like, the GM would be like, oh, you took notes on that? They're changing their public face. I didn't think you would remember. You can do that kind of stuff. So what's the newest player do truncheons and flagons have to say? You've been pretty quiet.
Well, I'm kind of letting you guys riff off each other. But on the note-taking aspect, something we fell into when we were running Kingmaker is having only one note-taker.
This is a bad choice. Do not fall into that mistake.
Everybody takes some notes. Just some. Someone can get all of it, but everybody's something, at least the stuff your character directly does. It's good. It's nice, and it's great to be lazy and have a scribe for the party, like I kind of ended up being, but that was part of the story of Kingmaker. Someone had to make a map. So it went from...
Worst module ever.
Oh, so bad. But I want to go and buy all the accoutrements for it, because I've got the deck of cards that are all the items and things you were supposed to find. I want to go and get the maps, where it's the actual folio. I want to pick up the tiles, which are every battle map, double-sided tiles. And then get all the books and just see if I ever want to torture people.
Well, let's get back on the note-taking.
Like, what happened in the session I was in is we had one note-taker, because we had a quest reward with everyone in the party gets a masterwork weapon.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big deal for a first-level character. But we had to order out the order in which they would be built, because this is, you know, a guy and his assistants. It's going to take time. This is a realistic thing. And the one person that had the notes wasn't there. Please do not fall into this.
Yeah, it's the same thing with your character sheet for new players, too. We already went over this in the first half, but still, maintain that character sheet. Keep everything in order. It's a good habit to get into early and maintain it as long as you can to, you know, not only have your notes well-maintained, well-written, but take care of your character sheet as well. Because if that thing vanishes, especially as a new player, you're in for an uphill battle, or having to roll a brand new character all by yourself with no assistance while everybody else plays the game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely have backups. Have an emergency digital copy, which actually helps you organize everything. If you get one of the digital ones where it's like, you literally just type in what it is and it throws it in the correct area, and then you pick up a real sheet and you're like, all right, this is the exact same format. I'm just going to, okay, this is everything. And always have your GM look it over. Make sure it follows their rules if they've got special house deals.
Even if they don't.
One thing I highly advise is always just leave a sort of generic copy with your GM. It's something I'm thinking about doing for my new group. Have an emergency digital and keep one copy in a binder and keep one copy somewhere else where you know it'll always be.
Another good idea, too, to learn the system while we're on character sheets, because it segues into that, is on your spare time, if you have any spare time, I know... This is the future, so spare time is rare. But actually sit down and just make characters for the hell of it.
It is rather fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
The thing about it is, like, I personally am horrible about this. I have to kind of zone myself into my own space and kind of ignore the world. But it's a lot of fun in there. And what this will also do is, with these ideas that you're building in these dummy characters, you need a new character, or my GERD. You got one.
Well, not only that, I mean, you can save all these dummy characters you make. You can practice leveling them up. You got, say, dummy character X. You make a elven rogue and roll all the stats, go through the books just to figure out how to best build an elven rogue. Then you can follow it up by making a halfling rogue. And you go through all the steps of figuring out how to make a halfling rogue right, get all the traits and feats and all that stuff.
What happens if I take this path instead?
Yeah, what happens if I take this path instead? You know, you can practice leveling them up. And then... further down the line, you have a stack of character sheets from stuff, so you pretty much have a pretty good idea of how to build a character regardless of the book. So you got a halfling rogue, you got your elven rogue, you got a stack of other sheets. Set all this stuff aside, especially if you practice leveling them up, so your main character, you'll know what to do quicker on your own. And a year or two down the line, when you start getting that first itch to start running your own games, you have a stack of NPCs.
Hide behind the pile of dead bards.
Hide behind a pile of dead bards. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you know, another thing on this is, like, doing this will also help you develop characters that are more unique, so you're not just riffing off of a character that you've seen. So this serves a few purposes, this dummy practice. You create something new. You're creating something you can use later in your own games, and you're creating something you might be allowed to use in the presence of a game in case your character that you're playing goes right up the grave.
Or maybe your GM does a thing where all of a sudden you're playing new characters for a session or two, and then later down the line you see, oh, so this guy I totally temporary played totally has a thing to do with the main storyline. Luckily, I already had all the stats and didn't have to sit there for 4 hours like everyone else trying to roll new characters, and we went home.
One of the biggest suggestions I can give to a new player is not to jump into the swimming pool of role-playing headlong and scream, wee-hee, and just start splashing. This is how mistakes are made, like, again, with the rogue stealing from party members kind of example. You'll get a new player, and they want to test out their limits. I understand, drawing boundaries and everything. But at the same token, there's a difference between dipping your toes in the pools to find out if the water's just right, or just jumping into a hot spring sometime in Montana and then winding up a meme. Boiled alive. That must have been so horrible to clean up. So a lot of players, especially new players, and I'm gearing this topic towards them, of course, if you're playing a rogue, if you're playing a wizard, if you're playing a space battle minotaur gunslinger thing, whatever you're playing, don't go balls to the wall right as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Dip your toes in the pool, test the waters, and just start wading in until you hit that comfortable point.
Like, a good way to kind of ease yourself into the acting portion of this, play a character whose personality mirrors your own. It's a very easy way to do it, and what this will do is this will help you, you know, and then as you get more experience doing that, start creating subtle variations that are slowly deviating from your natural personality.
That and characters, just like real life people, because that's what role-playing games are supposed to emulate, is personalities and concepts of real life. And people change. This is one of the oldest adages we got. We are not the same people we were 2 years ago, and definitely not the same people we were 20, because I'd still be like wondering why I didn't change Kazakhan's diapers. A shot at the kid over there. Pow, take it.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure I still wasn't wearing them at that age.
Okay, whatever, dude.
Side of the point.
I was listening to dubstep before you were born. It means before you were even in diapers. Anyway, back to the topic. The thing is, people change. So when you make your character, you know, like Kazarkan said, you know, mirror a bit of your personality, and there's no character you're going to make ever which doesn't have a little slice of your personality in them, or a bit of you in them, because it is your creation. But as the game continues, your characters are going through life and death situations. It happens with every game out there, except for maybe Bunnies and Burrows, but it happens with almost every game out there. The characters are going through hardships. They're getting experience from overcoming obstacles. They're the heroes of the campaign. They're going to go through situations that no normal person would, and this is going to fundamentally change them. Some people are going to become better. Some people are going to become worse. Some people are going to be more jaded. Some people are going to just start losing their marbles. So as the game progresses, you can slowly take out some of your own personal mindset and interject other portions of a mindset in there based on stimulus.
Right.
After all, I mean, your character, you know, if you're playing Space Minotaur Gun Blasty Dude, 20 game sessions from now, the character might have developed a nervous tic from a near-death experience and be less cocky. He might think he's the biggest, baddest motherfucker out in the space lanes, but after a couple of close calls, he may be thinking, you know, there might be something to this mortality thing.
Maybe there's some truth to this.
Maybe there's some truth to it.
It's not just for my enemies.
So yeah, when a new player creates a character, they should, you know, have a good starting base, a good theme to start from, maybe a few personality quirks and interject themselves, but realize that over time, just like who they are, their character's going to change as well.
Right, and, you know, another thing that kind of is on the subject of separating a character from yourself, kind of where this discussion has been headed, mm-hmm. gradually, is remembering that their set of knowledge is very different from your own.
That is true.
And this affects a phenomenon called metagaming. This is the greater community's word for it, and it's a good word for it. But what this is using knowledge that your player has, that you have, that your character does not. This is a faux pas. Try to avoid this. Or, if you want to, ask the DM, so what would I have to roll to try to understand what I already do, and you explain whatever concept you're talking about? A lot of the times, they'll go, oh, give me like a history, or whatever the equivalent is.
Yeah, depending on whatever the stats of the character is, there are going to be times where your character is more or less charismatic than you are, more or less strong than you are, more or less wise, And in some cases, you know, it's easy to dumb yourself down to a degree. You know, if you're playing a low charisma character, you know, they just might have something about them that puts people off, and then you realize they never clean their dishes up, which isn't very charismatic. But at the same time, a high charisma person may be spick, span, perfect, and always Stepford Wife ready. You know, they look like the spitting image out of a 50s, like, picture.
Fashion catalog.
Like a fashion catalog. You know, it just, charisma is one of those wibbly wobblies. But if they're stronger than you are, you know, it's easy to assume, oh, they're going to lift more, or they're going to lift less than I do because based on their stats. And the same thing goes, especially with knowledges. If you're playing a character who's a super intelligent doctor, well, the player obviously isn't a super intelligent doctor because they'd probably be making way too much money to have time to roleplay. So it is totally feasible at that point to say, hey, look, my doctor has an IQ of 210. I'm going to make a roll here, and maybe the GM might clue me in. So then at that point, open a dialogue with your GM and be like, look, my character's way smarter than everybody at this table. Can I make a roll to figure this out?
And depending on the GM, most of them, I would assume.
A vast majority, I would think, would allow that, because if a player character is smart, or, yeah, if the character's smarter than the player character, typically a GM will be like, yeah, you can make a roll, because, you know, who has a 210 IQ that you bump into on a daily basis? At that point, the character's fucking smart.
Genius.
Yeah. Super smart. Super smart.
But, you know, on the same token, you know, their experiences are different. That same 210 IQ doctor, right, he's undergone what we assume to be medical training. Unless you are a paramedic, a doctor, or a nurse, chances are pretty good you ain't gonna know quite as much as your character will.
Or, in that case, as a new player, and even experienced players can get away with this, leave your actions subject to interpretation. So that 210 doctor runs up on an injured party member and says, you know, oh, I'm going to splice apart his subcutaneous tissues to get at the squibbly splooch and modify his snargleblaff gland. It probably isn't going to work too well, but if you run over and say, hey, I'm going to leave it subject to interpretation. Hey, GM dude, I'm attempting to stabilize my party member. I've got my med kit with me. My character knows what to use better than I do. I'm just going to stabilize him, all right? You know, brief and concise. I'm going to try to stabilize him.
Which, you know, that changes the knowledge that you as a player need to. How do I fix a broken bone and treat for shock to, I know this, click?
Yeah, to pretty much, I know this. Because there's been times where a GM has pulled crazy shit out of left field, and I, as a player, don't know what it is. And then I'm like, oh, my character's smarter than I am. Well, then I'm just going to roll some dice and let my GM clue me in. It's completely valid to do that.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, encouraged. A lot of things like to use the D&D or Pathfinder, the Arcana skill, that is exactly what that's for.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, you in real life may not know how to splint and bind a leg after a compound fracture, but a character who's a medic definitely does. That's basic training. So you just say, hey, I'm trying to,
I'm
trying to take care of his leg. That's a good enough description. You don't have to say, well, I'm going to get a good grip on his ankle to yank on it to get the bone to set back in place, while my assistant presses on it to make sure it stays in place.
Or my favorite one from when we were playing Vampire.
Mm.
All right, we got all this water. I'm going to make holy water, because my character's religious.
Oh, yeah. That fight went so down the tube so fast.
That was a very bizarre fight.
It's just a body.
It's just a body.
You know, we can say that Obi-Wan on the podcast because he doesn't listen to him. So it's just a body.
Glorious.
I know. So that's wrapping up a handful of new player tips. Hopefully you got something out of this.
Ooh, right. Good tip.
Oh, another tip.
Get your hands on a set of dice to call your own. This is a simple thing. It's a stupid little thing. But that feeling of ownership, and, you know, you'll find dice that you find you like. Now, there's two kinds of things that you can be aware of. One, you want the ones that you like because they roll well. Or they seem to roll pretty high, even though there's, you know, no statistical difference. You know, they're good dice.
I know
better. But, you know, one thing I would caution you is don't necessarily just go for the prettiest dice. Try rolling them if the shop will allow it. Not to say don't get pretty dice. Don't go for the prettiest.
You know, here's...
They don't always roll nice.
Here's one thing I did, which is how I realized I got such a large dice collection. Trust me, you will accumulate these.
It will happen.
Sometimes, most shops, when they go to their distributor, can buy just a bag of...
Crappy dice.
Not crappy dice, just... Here's a whole bunch of unmatched pairs.
Yeah, the pound bag.
Yeah, the pound bag. You buy it by the pound. you know, if you feel inclined and they're pretty reasonable, try to just buy a thing of those and roll every dice in there and see which one likes you or which one really fits with the character. Like, I have dice that are for specific characters or character type.
Okay, actually, I'm going to end this with one last dice-related tips. Tip. Yeah, just a tip. One last dice-related tip, because you guys didn't cover this, and we should have earlier.
Oh, punishing your dice?
Not well, punishing your dice is, yeah, that's going to come later. They're going to learn about that. Motherfuckers. Yeah, your dice shaming. But that's another tip for another day. Anyway, the last tip before we end this episode is a good portion of role players are superstitious about their dice.
Don't touch them.
Do not. Because some role players will act really adamantly bad about it, or you will ruin their juju or some crazy shit. But a lot of role players do not like having their dice touched by other hands. So if you need to roll a die, do not just reach over into somebody else's area unless, A, you've got permission beforehand, or they give you permission on the spot to go ahead and borrow their dice for rolling. Because, you know, new players don't always have dice. However, this said, some players do not like their dice touched at all and have weird rituals or lay them out in strange patterns on the table, like all the high numbers sitting upwards or something like that.
My personal favorite, that little habit.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is what I do is when I sit down to play a character, I will take my set of dice, a complete set of dice for that, just that character. And I will roll them until they roll their highest number. And then I will set them aside and roll the next one.
See? Exactly. It's kind of like a little superstitious thing. And a lot of gamers, I've done it myself, is do crazy shit with your dice. Like, when the dice are hot, they're hot. But for some strange reason, I'm not superstitious really at all. But still, I can sometimes blame my dice personally for starting to roll bad after somebody else has reached over and touched them. Right. I've had it happen where my dice just suddenly stop exploding on me and I'm like, what the hell? And other players will just get bent out of shape if you reach over and touch their dice. So new players, it's best if you get your own dice set. Don't touch other people's stuff.
Now, there are some, again, ask first. Hey, I don't have enough D6s to roll for this spell. Do you guys mind if I borrow some? Bam. They'll give you some dice that you can just use.
Yeah, most GMs have a bag or a bucket or something that's a loaner set. Or at one place I was at, they had an entire glass boot. And they would just pick whatever dice you need out of the boot. Those are the loaners. Because, yes, people will accumulate dice.
It is a very bizarre habit that you will find yourself getting into. Oh, well, I'm getting this new character. I'm doing this new character. I wonder what dice would work for him.
Yeah, I've done that. I played a mage one time and bought an entirely new set and a half of fireball dice.
Ah.
All the dice were red with golden stripes all through them. Those were that character-specific dice set. Then I played another mage who was an acid mage, and I got these kind of creamy green with green fleck dice in them. I've done that. I've seen people make a character and be like, oh, it's an electricity mage, and so they get blue dice with golden stripes.
Or, you know, I just created this kineticist. He's a fire dude. Well, I'm going to need a bunch of D6s down the road, so I'll buy a block of those.
I've seen people do it. They'll buy, like, metallic dice just for a warrior.
Or giant, really big plastic dice for a goblin.
Yeah.
Or my personal favorite, my occultist had the crystalline dice series, which, god, D20s suck for those. But D10s and D6s are D4s are the best, though.
See, exactly. So,
All sorts of crazy shit.
Anyway, that's pretty much the end of our episode for this month. We'll see you guys again in April. How about that, huh?
Well, goody. April Fool's jokes abound.
No, actually, I checked our recording schedule. We're going to miss April Fool's.
Well, no, because I'm going to be recording for SakuraCon.
Oh, shameless plug.
So, yeah, I'm going to be doing some video and audio recording with Nedge and Darth Narsis and our guests from across the mountains. Definitely keep an ear out for that, or an eye, because I'm doing video. And I'll see if I can do, like, RadCon and get some, you know, just go up to booths and be like, hey, you got a minute? Maybe we do a quick interview for my podcast. And I'll be the only one representing us besides the aforementioned. Goblin is going to be unable to make it. And as far as I know, Kazarkan is busy.
That is correct. So, however, interestingly, you might see Purple Gaming over there.
I'm going to try and get him in an interview. I'm going to corner him with the camera and be like, dude.
Oh, Phil, dude, I can hook you up with that. I promise.
No, you can't talk to Purple Hippo Gaming because he knows secrets. Okay, anyway, we gotta end this shit.
Alright, peace out, everybody. Blasphemous is out.
Dragon back to lair. Have a good one.
And now it's time for Goblin's favorite thing, cueing the outro music.
Da-na-na-na.
Whee!
Blunt Force Gamers.
You are whatever muddies the white.
I'm killing Steve Shives.
I am so blue ball on fucking EA right now.
It means hold on, fuck.
Durr.
Pay me rent, bitch.
Hey! I paid for a 2-liter, you fucker!
3, 2, 1. Ready?
Hello, feeling tired at the gaming table? Unsure if your game needs inspiration? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you. Now there's a podcast untamed by political correctness that may bring your game some added invigoration, whether it is video gaming, tabletop gaming, or card gaming. Each episode may contain unusual amounts of truth, logic, opinions based on personal experiences, half-assed insights, and random bullshit. The BFG podcast is not recommended for children under 18, nor for children over 18, and is not suitable for those who are nursing, pregnant, recently pregnant, or for those who can get others pregnant. Each episode may also contain crude and or puerile humor, humor of a racist, sexist, nihilist, ableist, jingoist, ageist, or fatalist commentary. Warning! Excessive listening to the podcast may cause the following conditions: tremors, sweating, facial twitching, premature ejaculation, pustulant tumors, nausea, headaches, dizziness, swelling in the left kneecap, lucid dreaming, daydreaming, night terrors, involuntary convulsions, a condition known as sausage fingers, spontaneous rectal combustion, autoerotic asphyxiation, an unusual desire to befriend parasitic space monsters, Bigfoot sightings, and uncontrollable facepalming. Lactation is known to occur in both men and women. Do not listen to BFG if you suffer from any of the following conditions: social justice whining, passive-aggressive hippie syndrome, high-speed battles with a Nexus 6, table-flipping rage quitting, or diagnosed as having no sense of humor. Ask your doctor if asking your doctor is right for you.
Ah, ai janayo, ski dake da yo.